And welcome back to the History on the Rocks podcast. This is your host, Cody. Happy 4th of July. And of course, joining me, my wife, Audrey, is here.
Hello.
How'd you like that opening?
That's good.
Yeah.
I like that.
70s synth national anthem.
Oh.
I don't know. I just added it to the beginning. I was like, this will sound cool.
Yeah, it was. I liked it.
My favorite day of the year. 4th of July.
Freedom.
Freedom Day. Well, we've got a very, very appropriate topic for today.
All right.
With the 4th of July, I've added another one.
Another theme.
I've added another theme. We're going to talk.
Shocking.
Yeah, I know. I found another one. Well, I think this is my last one because then we're going to start going back and doing part twos of other ones. And maybe part threes because we've already done part two of Ridiculous Conflicts, but start looking at some more of those. But this one, on the 4th of July, right?
Mm-hmm.
Historic rebellions and revolts.
Okay, yeah.
Goes right on theme for 4th of July.
Hand in hand.
But we're not going to be talking about anything in the United States.
Okay.
But I've got some cool ones. What are you drinking over there? Savvy B.
I got a fat glass.
Fat glass of Savvy B.
I mean.
And she's got it in her friend's glass.
Oh, yeah. It is in my friend's glass. It was, you know, sometimes when you get towards the end of a bottle, it's like, do I want two small glasses or do I just.
No, you just say fuck it and you pour the rest of it in there.
I poured a very large amount and then there was like a splash left. I'm like, oh, well.
Yeah, it's kind of like whiskey. Now you get to the bottom of the bottle and you're like. This might not be the best idea, but also that's not a full glass in there, so let's make it like a glass and a half.
I did that with one of the bottles that we had, and I was like, I really don't want this big of a glass. So I left like a very small amount, and then I think it was like one night last week, and I poured a glass, and I'm like, oh, well, this is weak.
Yeah.
And we didn't have anything that was the same, so I like couldn't. You know, mix it.
First world problems.
Yeah, I know. But.
All right.
Anyway, what do you. Well, you're boring.
No, this is not boring. I'm drinking Busch Light. It's America week. Okay. It is a 4th of July. There is nothing more American than Busch Light in a bottle. Classy.
Very classy.
Very classy. Class, class, class. And we got Chandler over there, our little dog, who's like a 22-pound
Rat terrier
chihuahua mix. And he is scared. Absolutely shitless because there's fireworks going off in the neighborhood already.
Yeah.
But
they started them earlier today, I think, just to, you know, test fire.
Yeah, test fire some of them. Now they're kind of going with it being dark.
With Chandler, we're used
to this.
Suck it
up,
buddy. We've had him now seven years.
Yes. He's 9 years old.
We kind of just know he'll get over it.
Yeah, he'll be fine.
I have his little diffuser plugged in right by him.
He looks calm enough right now.
I just hope Kennedy sleeps with
Kennedy. Will be fine. That girl's, she's a badass.
She's doing okay, but I'm like, oh no. First 4th of July.
She ain't scared of shit.
Well, no, she's not scared, but it just could, you know, be a little shocking if there's a big boom and she's like, well, what the heck was that?
She'll be fine. So let's get this going. All right, so historic rebellions and revolts. So if I say the word genocide.
Yes.
What is one of the first things that comes to mind when I say genocide?
Gonna go with the Holocaust.
The Holocaust, exactly. It's the biggest genocide of the 20th century. Right?
Yeah.
Very,
I would say so.
Very significant historical event. And we all know Adolf Hitler, in charge of the German military, becomes self-proclaims himself as the Führer, and he takes his vengeance out on the Jewish people in a mass genocide, which is the extermination of a ethnic group. What if I told you that the Holocaust, Hitler's Holocaust, was not the first German genocide of the 20th century?
I'd be a little bit surprised.
Okay, be surprised, because it's not.
I'm really surprised. Shocked.
Shocked. I'm shocked. Shock value for all of you right there. The first genocide by the Germans is actually called the Herero-Namaqua genocide, and it took place between 1904 and 1907 in Southwest Africa.
I thought you said it was a German genocide.
Oh, it is. Thanks for asking that question. Because remember, African colonization by European countries, the Germans had many different parts of Africa when the Europeans colonized. And so one of their main areas that they colonized, what is current day Namibia, down in Southwest Africa, just north of South Africa, the country. And this was the first systematic extermination of the Herero and Namaqua people by German colonial forces. Yes.
Very interesting.
That's why I found this one to be interesting, because it's very overlooked because of the Holocaust, which occurs, you know, 35 years later.
Like that much later.
Right, 35 years later. But, you know, when it comes to African history, I've said this before on the podcast, everyone overlooks African history. Yeah. We never really talk about it, especially the genocides that have happened there, like the Hutus and the Tutsis and the Rwandan genocide. Africa is a very unstable place. And especially during European colonization, there is a lot of smaller genocides, but also large-scale genocides that are not so much talked about because European colonies, right, the European, the European powers like Germany, Italy, Belgium, they took sides amongst these different tribes that they had colonized in these areas. Germany had this colony established in Southwest Africa, like I said, modern-day Namibia. If you look on a map, it's way down there by Angola, just north of South Africa. And the Herero and Namaqua are indigenous peoples that live in this area. And they mostly are cattle herders and farmers. So nothing, not really jobs that are like high scale. Right. Mm-hmm. They're more like they're not nomadic, but they are mostly engaged in, like I said, bringing up cattle, trading cattle, whatever, you know, cattle can provide meat.
Still very important.
Hide, milk. Yeah. It, very important for back in the early 1900s. And then, like I said, farmers. German colonizers seized land and livestock from the Herero and Namaqua, leading to tensions and conflicts, and the colonial administration's policies, including harsh labor practices and land seizures, exacerbated these tensions. So basically, what I'm saying here is that once Germany colonized, okay, they put this stranglehold on these indigenous peoples, right? And they pretty much took advantage of their resources, and they made them slaves, and they took their land. Something that in history happens quite often.
It does, yes.
In the United States, we talk about all the time, Native Americans, right?
Took their land.
Took their land, put them on reservations. We didn't really use them for slave labor, thank God, but still outing these people from their natural way of life to take advantage and manipulate them to gain the resources for your own economic gain, really. Yeah. So there's the Herero Uprising in 1904. And in January of 1904, the Herero people, led by Chief Samuel Maherero. So Herero is the indigenous population. Maherero is the chief. And they rebelled against the German colonial rule. They attacked farms and outposts, killing German settlers and soldiers. In response to this, the German government dispatched General Lothar von Trotha to suppress this rebellion.
Sounds German.
It doesn't sound German to me, though. Like, oh, Lothar, like L-O-T-H-A-R does not sound like a German name to me.
L-O-T-H.
Lothar or Lothar, like, that doesn't sound German to me at all. And then von does sound, you know, from, it's always from here. But Trotha, I'd have to look that up, but anyway, he's a general dispatched by the German government to end this rebellion from the Herero people.
And it might not sound German, but he is German,
yeah,
so it is.
It's true. So he implements a brutal military campaign that's aimed at exterminating the Herero population. And what happens is the Battle of Waterberg, which is August 1904, the Herero forces are defeated here. Because the Germans have, obviously, a large army, they have better equipment, more advanced weaponry, And so this uprising is stopped very quickly because of those advantages that the Germans have. The surviving Herero flee to the Omaheke Desert.
Which is where?
Which is in modern-day Namibia.
Oh, okay.
So if you looked at a map, southwestern, just outside of modern-day Namibia, there's the Omaheke Desert. And now this genocide starts with the extermination order, which comes in on October 2nd of 1904. Von Trotha issues the quote-unquote extermination order, stating that Herero people were no longer German subjects and should be driven out of the territory or killed. And now this leads to mass killings, starvation, and dehydration in the desert after they had fled, right? Because, like, if you're not prepared to live in the desert, well, you're not really going to survive for a long time with it being hot. Now, here's the interesting part. Concentration camps were set up. So again, we know concentration camps from the Holocaust.
Yeah.
Right? However, these concentration camps were actually set up during this time as well. This wasn't a new idea by Hitler. This had already occurred in Southwest Africa.
Huh.
Survivors that were captured were placed in these concentration camps under horrific conditions, where many died from disease, overwork, and malnutrition.
Just like in the Holocaust.
Just like the Jews in the Holocaust. The most notorious camp is on this location, which is called Shark Island. But it's not really an island when you look at the map.
Mm-hmm.
When I looked this up, it's more like a peninsula that kind of roots off of mainland Namibia. So I don't really know why they called it Shark Island, but it might just because it's really, it is surrounded mostly by water, but it's actually a peninsula. It's still connected to land, but it's this like very straight, narrow piece of like rocky land. And if you go look at the images on like Google, it's kind of crazy. It looks just like a World War II concentration camp under Hitler. Like the buildings are very similar, the long row houses, like all those kinds of things. So like that really caught my eye to be like, this is not like, this was not a, like original idea by Hitler. Like these concentration camps were already like a German idea within their military
beforehand,
even within this genocide or genocide. Yeah. So now there's the Namaqua rebellion. So the other group, right? Mm-hmm. So we have the Herero people in their uprising in 1904. And then we have the Namaqua people who are also indigenous people to this region. They have their rebellion against the Germans in 1905 that's led by a man named Chief Hendrik Witboi, which is funny because the name Hendrik is spelled Hendrik as in like the Swedish name Hendrik, H-E-N-D-R-I-K. A very European name.
Yeah.
And then Witboi, W-I-T-B-O-O-I, which could be very African last name, right? But I just found, like, the first name and the last name to be very, like, they don't go together.
Yeah, for sure.
You know? So they also, the Namaqua people also rebel against the Germans, and they face the same exact response, right? Heavy German army, concentration camps, they suffer a mass killing, and are also forced to pretty much go into slave work labor, to where many of them also died. And a lot of them also retreated to the desert, where, again, most of the Namaqua people died alongside the Herero people being dehydrated. Now, it is estimated that about 80% of the Herero population, so this is around 65,000 out of 80,000 people, and 50% of the Namaqua population had perished during this genocide. So this is huge.
Yeah.
If you look back at like the Holocaust, the amount of Jewish people killed, if you talk about percentages, is way less than 80%.
Yeah.
Now there's more number wise, but if we're talking about a population of an ethnic group like the Herero population, 65,000 out of 80,000 people, 80% of their actual population was exterminated by the German Empire. Yeah. And then 50% of the Namaqua population. So they're saying the numbers were 10,000 out of about 20,000 people were killed during this genocide.
Wow.
So that's a large amount of indigenous population in Africa, especially southern Africa.
Yeah. And obviously, like, with the Holocaust, there was just more numbers. There's more people.
Larger larger Jewish population.
Yes.
In the millions, right? Here we're talking thousands. That's why I'm not trying to compare it based off of the amount of lives, but rather the percentage
of an ethnic group
that was taken out, because it's still significant, right?
Yeah,
I'm not saying that.
Think so.
I'm not saying that like the Jewish extermination wasn't a big deal, because that's a lot of people.
Yeah, and it was
like
definitely
millions
a big
of people.
Deal.
But when we're looking at an indigenous population of an ethnic group, 80% is a lot. Even 50% is a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's kind of crazy. So the Herero and Namaqua genocide is often regarded as a precursor to later genocides of the 20th century, including the Holocaust. And the events are recognized as genocide by many historians and scholars. So the one thing I saw when I was reading up about this is that some historians and scholars claim that this was a war and not necessarily a genocide, but the argument for genocide was that there was an official order of extermination of an ethnic group, which in any term of genocide would literally fall under the definition of it being a genocide. But that's the only thing I found, is that some historians and scholars would argue that this particular conflict was more of a rebellion and an act of like revolution, like a war against the German colonization, kind of like how if you thought of it as like the, you know, the colonists against the British military in the American War of Independence. That's what some people argue is happening here, is that the Herero and Namaqua were trying to fight for their freedom back, being a colony. But again, these are ethnic groups, and concentration camps and an official extermination order makes this fall under a genocide.
So why is this not like discussed?
Because it's Africa.
But it's just like crazy to me that this happened. But then, you know, I mean, obviously Hitler was, he did an awful, awful thing.
You have that. You have a smoke screen.
But like this happened prior to him.
Yeah. And I totally get what you're saying. And I think that's the craziest part about history, is that these big events that you don't hear about, right? Something like this atrocity gets smokescreened and underplayed because of bigger events that occurred afterwards.
Yeah. And I mean, it was big.
Yeah.
Was what, you know, happened.
Absolutely.
With Hitler, but it's just crazy that.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy. This is a wild
that this
story.
It just isn't brought up ever to be like, well, this happened before Hitler too.
Yeah. Like a precursor to, like they said, the Holocaust and other genocides in the 20th century, like the Rwanda genocide, which happened just north of Namibia. However, in recent years, Germany has acknowledged the atrocities committed during the genocide. And in 2004, which is not so much recent, but 20 years ago, the German government formally apologized for the genocide. And in 2021, they agreed to provide financial aid to Namibia as a gesture of atonement.
Oh.
So just 3 years ago, Germany kind of, you know, Germany's been dealing with this for a long time, since World War II. You know, just having family over there, they don't like to talk about it. They learn it in school.
Yeah.
It's not something
it's
that you really bring up to German people, to talk about Hitler and the Holocaust or World War II. But, like, Germany's been dealing with, you know, their past, just like we deal with our past, right, with slavery and anything like that. No country is perfect. You find me a perfect country in the world and you let me know. there isn't one. They have their atrocities everywhere. It's life. And living in, you know, 2024, we all think the world is rainbows and butterflies and there's no such thing as conflict and everyone loves each other. It's not reality. It never has been.
Sweden?
No. Vikings. Vikings.
Oh, Vikings. Yep.
Vikings.
Just
no.
Kidding.
No. The Nordic countries. Do not talk to me about the fucking Nordic countries ever again. I don't want another person telling me but that they've made socialism real. It's not the same thing.
Okay, I wasn't going there, but they just live happy lives.
No, they live happy lives because they are a homogenous society. I'm not going there.
No, we're not going there.
Anyway, Germany has apologized. They've been dealing with their own past, obviously, and really cool, in 2021, they have started to provide financial aid to Namibia, the modern-day African country, to atone for their wrongdoings.
So would that be, like, considered reparations?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Reparations, I guess, could be a word. I don't think it could be reparations, though, because I believe that they're helping the government, not the direct people.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm you know what I'm saying? So they're supplying financial aid to the Namibian government. They're not providing reparations to the direct people that were involved.
Like impacted down
right,
the
like
line.
Right, like the indigenous group itself.
Yeah,
so.
Okay.
So the impact on Namibia today, the genocide has a very lasting impact on the Herero and Namaqua communities. There's still deep scars that persist in Namibian society. The loss of life and cultural destruction have had long-term effects on these communities, because this is where, when the destruction of ethnic groups, especially in Africa, I would say Africa arguably is one of the most sensitive areas for this. You lose culture, you lose language, you lose this whole identity of these people because of these mass killings, and there's not many of them left to keep that tradition going, which has had a large impact on Namibia as a country today. To our point earlier, what you were saying is that, you know, why don't you hear about this?
Mm-hmm.
This is actually a significant case study in the field of genocide studies. So if you were to study genocides specifically as like a history, you would hear about the Herero and Namaqua genocide.
Yeah, it'd be part of the curriculum.
It would be part of that kind of curriculum, and how it really has this connection to the later events, you know, leading up to the to the Holocaust, and then later even the Rwanda genocide, which happens in the 90s. You know, we still have genocides going on today that aren't being talked about.
Yeah.
Around the world, in Africa especially, with militant groups, and it just kind of gets ignored. But I thought this was a really interesting story because,
yeah, for sure.
You know, I'm a huge World War II buff. I freaking love World War II history, both sides of it, learning about, you know, Hitler in general as a total psychopath, and how one man can just totally turn a nation, you know, against a specific group of people.
Yeah.
And then obviously the American part of it and the Allied part of it, of the actual campaign into World War II. But the Holocaust in general is probably the widest known genocide that is studied around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And finding this, I was taken back because I was like, holy crap, this happened before.
Yeah.
Like, this happened on a smaller scale. And yep. I'm not going to, I don't want to take away from it at all, but it happened on a smaller scale.
Yes.
Like we were talking about millions to thousands of people, but it's like Hitler took a playbook from the early German Empire.
Yeah.
Just at the dawn of the 20th century and flipped it to be a massive thing.
How do you know, I don't know if you would know off the top of your head or whatever, but like how many leaders were like before him? Or before, like, in between this happening and then to him?
Well, Germany's kind of complicated because Germany is unified in the late 1800s. And they are more of a principality type of country beforehand, where they have a bunch of different kingdoms that are part of one Germanic group.
Okay.
So it's kind of hard right off the top of my head without kind of going and you know, typing it out or making a list of it. But I know you have what's the Kaiser, right? The king.
Mm-hmm.
They have a Kaiser up until the transfer to Chancellor, which is just after the 1910-ish is the first Chancellor of Germany. And then you have Hitler.
And he was a Chancellor.
Technically, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Hitler was... He overtook the chancellor spot and then named himself the Führer. But before that, just after, like, German unification happens because all the tribes of Germany unify under one government. Kind of like the states. Kind of like the colonies. Think of it like the colonies, right? Our 13 colonies, they unify under the Constitution. They're no longer separate states.
Yeah.
Which they were under the Articles of Confederation. Once our new Constitution is drawn up, then... all the states become really one country, unified together under one government. Same thing happens with Germany in the late 1800s.
Okay.
So it's a really complicated German history. Like, I took German history in college, and it it's a kingdom, and there's all these principalities, which we would like call counties. I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all ruled by different princes.
Yeah.
Okay. They're all these different kingdoms that make up the German collective, mm-hmm. I guess. And then they're unified under one Germany. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to get into.
Do you think, I guess we could maybe ask, is this something that, like, German students would learn in history?
I don't know. I don't know. I asked Max or Mira if they've ever learned about this. Mira,
that'd be kind of interesting.
If you're listening still to the podcast, you named it, so I hope you're listening to it still. Mira, Max, if you listen, shoot me a text and let me know if you've ever heard of the Herero-Namaqua genocide in school. Because I would actually, yeah, that's a great question. I would be really curious to know if this is something that they learned about, you know, outside of the Holocaust in their history. So
yeah.
Our second story is the Colombo dos Palmares.
Your accent's great.
It's Portuguese.
Hey, I'm Portuguese.
Yeah, you're a freaking mutt. You're everything. Holy crap.
But hey, Portuguese is in there.
I've never met someone who is like, I'm this and this and this and this, and they're still counting on two hands. I'm like, what?
Get out of here. A European mutt.
Yeah, seriously. This is actually a pretty interesting historical, not event, but location. And this is in Brazil. And if you know anything about South America, Brazil is the only country, except for French Guinea, that in South America is actually Portuguese and not Spanish. So once the Spanish came and colonized, you know, Columbus and all Cortez and all those guys came, and the Spanish colonized South America up to Mexico and the Caribbean, the Portuguese actually colonized Brazil. That's why Brazilians speak Portuguese, not Spanish, while the rest of the countries in South America speak Spanish. So the Colombo dos Palmares, I'm going to try so hard to pronounce this right, though. Colombo dos Palmares is a community of escaped enslaved Africans in Brazil that existed from approximately 1605 to 1694. This is located in the present-day state of Alagoas. Alagoas. I don't know. That sounds right to me. Which is in northeastern Brazil, so closer to the Atlantic Ocean, if you looked on a map.
Yeah, so like Brazil is on the east side of South America.
Correct. And Columbus, the word Columbus, is literally a community of runaway enslaved people in Brazilian history. And it's very significant due to its size, longevity, and its resistance against colonial powers like the Portuguese.
You know what? I was just thinking that would be really helpful sometimes. Just side note, at Hobby Lobby, they have really cool maps.
Should I get a map up there?
I think there should be. Should get one.
Oh my God, right that I there. Can use my laser pointer.
Yes, so you can show me.
Or I can get one of those really long silver pointer sticks and just go smack it on the wall.
Be Teachers like, used to use those when we were younger.
We are talking about right here.
you pull the map down.
And no teacher could ever do it the first time. It would always sling back up. And they were like, oh, shit, give me a second. They tried to tug it down again. Then they would,
oh, my God.
And then remember,
flashbacks.
Do you remember when teachers would overpull it and we'd get stuck and they could never get it back up?
Yes, and then there's this big, like, chunk of white at the top.
Hysterical. I'm so happy today that we teach with technology and a smart board where I can project a map up there and I don't have to pull down a map. Even though I do have flip maps in my room.
Yeah.
They're not pull downs, but they it's like a big, large book map and you can flip them over to see different areas of the world. Pretty cool.
Anyway, sorry. I think the space is very open for a map.
I love ask my kids in class. They'll say Mr. Billick needs to put the laser pointer away because he is obsessed with it.
Didn't even know you had one.
Oh yeah, I love it. Yeah, because it's my remote. It switches my slides and it's a laser pointer. It's amazing.
Oh, nice.
So the Colombo dos Palmares was established in the early 17th century by enslaved Africans who escaped from Portuguese plantations. It grew to encompass several villages with a population that some estimate around 20,000 people at its peak. Now again, it's located in a remote mountainous region called the Sierra da Barriga, which provided natural defenses against attackers, because obviously you like to have the high ground.
Yes. It's an advantage.
The location was strategically chosen for its difficult terrain, which helped protect the inhabitants from slave catchers and colonial forces. Now, the most famous leader of Palmares was a man named Zumbi, Z-U-M-B-I, Dos Palmares, who became a symbol of resistance and the fight for freedom. Zumbi was born in Palmares and became its leader in 1678, known for his military and strategic skills. Now, the Colombo, right, this village of escaped slaves, had a well-organized society with agriculture, trade, and defense systems. So they pretty much built their own little country within what is the modern-day country of Brazil to defend themselves against the Portuguese Empire. They cultivated crops, hunted, traded with nearby communities, and included indigenous groups, and sometimes even did business with the Portuguese themselves.
Oh.
So that's
interesting.
That's interesting because it's how powerful this little society was.
Yeah.
Is that they could even do business with their colonizers and not feel threatened by them.
Yeah.
Because they had their own defenses, right? Their economy was pretty much booming within its own state. And their own colonizers wanted to do business with them because they needed what they were supplying.
Hmm. Smart.
So the Palmares, though, was constantly under threat from the Portuguese and Dutch colonial forces who attempted multiple times to destroy the settlement. The community successfully repelled many attacks due to its strong leadership and its strategic location. So many times, the Portuguese and the Dutch, being allies during this time, tried to take down this Palmares society, and they were not successful. However, in 1694, a massive Portuguese expedition led by Domingos Jorge Vejo.
Really love your Spanish.
I'm trying.
Hispanic.
All right. Do you want me to say this like a white person speaking English? Domingos Jorge Vejo. I think I know how to pronounce some of this.
No, you're doing it.
Domingos
really
Jorge Vejo. So, Domingos, he's equipped with better resources and firearms, just like the Germans were against the indigenous tribes in Namibia. They managed to destroy the main settlement of Palmares in 1694. Zumbi dos Palmares was captured and killed in 1695, marking the end of the Colombo's resistance. Now, the Colombos dos Palmares remains a powerful symbol of resistance and the struggle for freedom in Brazilian history. Zumbi dos Palmares is celebrated as a hero, and November 20th, the day of his death, is commemorated as Black Consciousness Day in Brazil. Now, I also read that Zumbi dos Palmares had a son, that his name was Zumba. Like Zumba, like literally the dance classes. But Zumba is what did I read? It's a word for like fighter or something like that, or something like a fighter or a resistance member or something like that. And he actually, after Zumbi dos Palmares' death, tried to keep the Colombo going. He tried to reestablish it after his father was killed, but to no avail. So the Colombo dos Palmares exemplifies the fight for freedom and resistance against oppression in general, highlighting the resilience and courage of the enslaved Africans who sought and built a life of autonomy and self-determination in their Colombo. I thought this was cool because we don't talk about South America very much.
No.
A lot of South American history is entangled with Spanish colonization. It's entangled with U.S. Policy throughout the 1900s. So I thought this was a cool story because we don't really talk about much of the Portuguese in Brazil, and let alone something as remarkable as what a Colombo is, like a mass society of former enslaved people that had resisted and found their own freedom within this area. and defended it, first of all, and then built their own economy and way of life, which I just thought was really cool. I thought it was appropriate, these two stories, on the 4th of July, as this podcast is coming out, to celebrate other revolts and rebellions around the world and, you know, the fight for freedom and just being able to overcome your oppressors.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
Yeah. So that's it.
Nice.
That's all I got for you guys today. Hopefully two stories you've never heard of before, because Audrey has never heard of them before.
No. I'm still like shocked by that first one.
Yeah, that German one took me off a little edge too. I was like, this is shocking. Nuts. I couldn't believe what I was reading at first. I had never heard about it. So very interesting part of
history.
The early 20th century leading up to the massive genocide of the Jews in World War II and the Holocaust. So,
yeah.
Well, happy Freedom Day, everyone.
Happy 4th of July.
Yes. Love 4th of July. Hope you're barbecuing today. Hope it's beautiful where you live. Go put some brats and burgers on the grill.
Mm.
Drink some wine, some beer, some whiskey. Everyone just
enjoy
the day.
And weekend, because it's kind of a nice lead-in. 4th of July on a Thursday, and then celebrations probably all weekend for a lot of people.
Here's my advice for 4th of July and the weekend. Everyone take your phones and delete your news apps, okay? Delete all your news apps. Don't read the news. Don't read anything about politics. Don't read anything. Just go out, be an American, be friendly to everyone, pass out beers, party all weekend, because we are all free in this country and we are allowed to live the lives that we want to. Okay?
Yeah.
So go out, be awesome. Happy 4th of July. We'll talk to you guys next week. Audrey and I are going to be in Canada next week, but we're going to get a podcast out.
Oh, yeah. So we're going to have to.
We're going to get an episode out before we leave. We're leaving Tuesday night next week. So we'll get one out for you on Thursday still.
Yeah.
Won't be an issue. I already have a topic ready to go. So.
Won't be doing things last minute next week.
No, we won't. All right. Well, like I said, go see some friends, family. Happy 4th of July. Have a great weekend. Be safe. And we will talk to you next week.
See ya. Happy 4th of July. Cheers.
Cheers.